Market Music with Fairbairn and Russell.
Hello and welcome to this hopefully the first of many podcasts hosted by Share Talk with myself. My name's Mark Fairbairn and Kenny Russell from Stirling Bridge Resources. Really, the purpose of these podcasts is to get the two of us together. We're going to talk about all things relating to the stock market, really, sort of musings between the two of us. My history is I started investing probably 7 years ago now, when I sort of started earning a little bit of money. I started with an oil company, had no idea what I was doing, didn't make any money on it. And I think eventually it just disappeared and dropped off completely. A couple of years later, I got into mining stocks. I'm not sure why. I think it was probably because reading the bulletin boards, and I was invested in, I think it was a telecommunications cloud service at the time. Someone had put on there, you need to look at ECR minerals. And, you know, at the time I was naive in the whole thing. And I went and looked at that and I got quite interested in mining and that sort of excitement that comes with exploration. So yeah, I say probably maybe 4 years ago I bought my first mining stock. It was back in 2016. It was actually 2013 when I got it. It was also quite longer than I thought, actually. And it did all right, actually, to be fair. ECR did all right for the first couple of months, but I didn't sell. There was sort of more news expected, and ended up losing all my gains and ended up going to a minus figure and really never got that money back. But that point there really, it woke me up, because it was the biggest investment, the biggest single investment I had ever made in mining, and it hooked me into mining. I just very attracted to that sector. So then I started to acquire different mining stocks, and then not taking what people say on the bulletin boards as gospel, trying to conduct my own research, getting involved with some events that were going on, and trying to meet people and get a better understanding of what I was actually buying into. So over the last, I'd say, 5 years, I've had a couple of good performers, but really I think anyone who is involved in the mining and exploration space would know that the last 5 years hasn't been that great. It did do okay in sort of 2017, but generally it's still been in a bit of a downturn. But I think the consensus is now it is starting to turn. So that's sort of my hope. I'm into mining and I intend to sort of stay into that. The network I've got involved with are quite into that. And I hope that we are into a new upswing. And my goal really with the whole investing thing is to make money, really. That's what I'm there for, is to make a decent bit of money so I can pay off my mortgage and yeah, basically have a slightly better life and get involved in lots of different projects. So that's me, a bit of a long-winded introduction to me. But what about you, Kenny? Where did you start?
Yep. Hi, Mark. Thanks for the introduction earlier on. Clearly, I'm a bit older than you, probably about 20 years. So I've been investing a lot longer than 5 or 6 years, probably the early 2000s, just after the sort of dot-com boom. Mainly through managing my own sort of pensions through my SIP, etc. So it was kind of low risk, but I felt in control because I was managing my own SIP. Quickly got a bit more aggressive with the SIP and started investing in AIM shares. Probably 2007, 2008, 2009. Done really well. Met a few characters along the way. Some of them are still about today. And then, cut a long story short, I got an absolute kicking in 2011, 2012. I pretty much lost everything. I fell out of the stock market. I walked away from it for sort of 3 or 4 years. And then, just by the nature of myself, I was drawn back to it. But this time, when I came back, I was determined not to make the same mistakes. And I didn't want to be part of the so-called 85% of people who don't make money on AIM. I wanted to be part of the sort of 15% that make money. So try to reinvent myself, come back, and rather than just being an investor and constantly on the bulletin boards and Twitter, etc., which I am anyway, but I also wanted to, a few more skill sets. So I quickly I learned some of the sort of mapping software in Australia. I've been working with a few companies in Australia, picking up licenses. I also do a lot of research as well. So I've tried to approach the market in a different way, come at it from both sides.
Yeah.
Pretty much the same as you, Mark. I just want to, you know, improve my life. And I'm a bit older than you, so I've not got a bigger runway as you. I would like to get back to where I was maybe 10 years ago. So, as you say, 2019 was probably a really rubbish year for me to come back to the market. But at the moment, I'm surviving. And if you can survive in this market, you can survive in any market.
So when did you come back to the market? Is it 2019?
Well, probably before that, to be honest. Probably about 2018.
But I didn't actually know your history in terms of you said you lost everything. I mean, if you're happy to perhaps talk about that, maybe what went wrong there. I mean, I'm looking I have lost money, but I haven't lost, tens of thousands. I've probably not even lost, maybe I've lost a few thousand, over the few years, but it's certainly not more than that. But obviously that comes with not putting as much in. If I'd have put more in, obviously the percentage loss would be the same. So what sort of happened with you then? Did you just get too heavy or what would you say what went sort of wrong? Or with hindsight, it's a wonderful thing. What would you say you'd do differently?
I probably went at it too aggressively, Mark. I went TR1 in a few companies. Instead of having, it's the same old story. I didn't diversify. I had two or three core holdings. Ended up a couple suspended, never come back. And I took a six-figure portfolio down to about
£3.49. Oh,
I know it sounds absolutely ridiculous, but I'm sure there's many guys out there that can relate to that. Once a share's suspended and you know it's not coming back, when that money's gone, there's nothing you can do. So
yeah, of course.
So,
yeah.
But sometimes you need a wee kick in the balls.
Well, everyone says, don't they, that you pay for your education in the market, and you do. I mean, everyone I've spoken to has really lost money before they've made it, and it wakes you up. You know, you don't take what you read in the boards as gospel. You know, you try and be more sensible about stuff and do your own research.
Yeah, well, that's why when I come back, I didn't want to be the same Kenny, because what was the point? You know,
what was
the point in spending 3 or 4 years, and then.
How have you changed your approach then to it? You mentioned there about, diversifying. That's certainly a problem that I've got. I don't diversify. I think my portfolio is solely in one sector. And even in that sector, it's only in a handful of companies. I think it is, how important would you say is that to diversify your investments?
Oh, it's critical. I mean, at the moment, my portfolio is, like I say, I'm in the rebuilding phase or planting acorns, so to speak. So I don't really have that massive problem where I need to work with this huge portfolio. Obviously, I've got other projects in the go, so a lot of my time's focused on that. But hopefully in 2020, that portfolio will grow, and then I can spend more time on investments rather than the other projects.
Yeah, okay. But do you have any sort of hard and fast rules that you sort of put on yourself with how you would spread your money around?
Every day is a school day. So I know it sounds quite corny, but I think 2019's probably taught quite a few lessons to people that nothing's, played by the rule book. You know, everything's been different. There's brokers went bust. It's just been the whole 2019, it was like a vicious circle. There was Brexit uncertainty for years and years. There was political unrest. There was, worldwide, kind of debt. Yeah. Everything's kind of just made this a vicious circle. And hopefully, the Brexit hopefully done now. The Tory party's getting in as well. As much as I'm a proud Scot, I must admit I've voted Tory all my life. So I was quite happy with that.
Yeah,
I think we need a virtuous circle, and there's a kind of a few glimmerings that it's going to happen in 2020. Definitely in the last few weeks, there's been a lot of liquidity in the market. It seems to be, it's definitely bottomed.
So when you say the market has bottomed, are you talking, what, the stock market in general, or are you talking about a specific sector?
I think it's just it's more investors. They just, for me, it feels it's bottomed. There's no fear. That fear, well, I'm not saying there's no fear, but the fear factor that was there in 2019 seems to have dissipated.
And you reckon the fear was from, as you say, like the political uncertainty, the Brexit uncertainty. Now, at least we've got clarity on that.
Well, we'd like to think we've got clarity, but it certainly seems we're going in the right direction. So
seems like it.
Yeah. There's lots of things as well. Obviously, the gold's on the rise again. And one of the most important things, I think, is the rise of the electric vehicles. I think quite a lot of people underestimate that, but I think that is just, you just look at all the facts and figures, stats, all the mainstream car makers, they're putting out roadmaps for the next 10, 15, 20 years, and it's all EVs. There's a lot of them are just completely and utterly abandoning the internal combustion engine. So
yeah,
these commodities have got to come from somewhere.
Yeah, they do. It's commodities, isn't it? Yeah, I mean, and what does it look like now then? Have we seen any movers then? I mean, obviously gold has started to go. That's usually the first to go, is it?
Yeah, well, obviously nickel had a good run sort of towards the last 3 or 4 months of 2019 as well.
Yeah.
And the actual nickel stockpile in LME had dropped away down to like, it was about 60,000 tonnes, I think, at one point. Mm-hmm. And usually, I mean, that's up, can be up at 500,000. Tons.
Right. Okay.
Yeah. Even some of zinc as well. I mean, the stockpile of zinc is a way down. So there's all these wee kind of warning signs that there's about to be a commodity boom.
Yeah.
All the market commentators are saying the same. But the world population is growing. You know, there's an insatiable demand for, you know, electronic products. You know, electricity consumption, you know, everything's gone up. So it's only natural that the commodity cycle's going to come full circle, and I think it's came full circle. We're just at the start of the journey.
You reckon it's at the start? Because, I mean, people have been sort of saying this for a few years now, and I think from my point of view, I think we saw the bottom sort of end of 2016, because 17 in commodities was pretty good. That's where I did make some money. 2018, from my point of view, was so-so. Nothing much happened. And then this year's not been very good. So I would sort of say that a bottom was found in 2016. But it just takes, I think it always takes a lot longer than, you know, it doesn't change overnight, does it? I think you have to look for the signs. And as you say, with EVs coming up, you look at the stockpile of these different commodities, and you look at how the markets moved since sort of the end of 16, it does suggest that it is coming, but I don't know how quick it'll come. You know, will it be this year? Will it go nuts? It's hard to tell, isn't it?
Yeah, it's hard to tell. But the good thing about 2019 in a way is it kind of weeds out. I mean, a terrible thing to say, but some of the brokers that were perhaps less desirable ones have fell on their sword. Survival of the fittest, rule of the jungle, whatever you want to call it. You know, it does weed out the ones that, not just brokers, but obviously a lot of companies went under as well. So what you're right. What you're left with is, in theory, it should be companies that are fit to go forward, but there's definitely been a lack of investment in a lot of projects. So, and companies don't have a lot of projects in their books either at the moment. So I think there will be a scramble once this market turns, and you know, and a company that's maybe only been sitting with maybe two projects, all of a sudden they'll need projects, because if they've got projects, they've got news flow, their share price goes up, they can raise more money. That's the way it works.
Yeah, and what is it like now, do you think, then, for raising money? I mean, I get the feeling it's still a little bit difficult for some companies.
Yeah, obviously a lot of the bucket shop guys have gone now. There still is a few out there, but it's definitely harder to raise money. The oil and gas seem to have no problem raising substantial money at the moment, but definitely in the mining sector, it's tricky at the moment. I think they're waiting for that... That flag to to waive, and then there is money sitting in the sidelines.
Oh, there will be, yeah. But what is that flag to waive then? What can we look out for?
I don't know. I mean, last time, well, I'm saying last time, in 2017, it was sort of Bitcoin, wasn't it? When it got up to about 20,000, that was the kind of, that was the flag, and it seemed there was that one year when everything was rosy in the garden, and then as soon as Bitcoin came back down to about, you know, 6,000-7,000, it was very stale. So I don't know if I had the answer to that, Mark, I wouldn't be sitting in a Saturday afternoon talking to you. I'd be sitting.
No, exactly. You, it's hard to answer that, isn't it? It's hard to answer. Okay, well, we've got maybe, you know, a few minutes left on our first podcast, Kenny. So I don't know, maybe we talk about one of the sort of stocks that we both hold. So I know that you hold Thor Mining, and me too. I think I've held it since, I think, 2017. It wasn't long after a presentation evening, actually. I don't remember exactly when, but I do know that within not very long, it had done really well, and I think I'd nearly got to 4p, and I was really quite pleased. But then I held on to it, and obviously, you know, anyone who does follow that stock knows where it's gone now, which, you know, is it's never nice to see that happen. But I was never, to be honest with you, I was never actually really that worried, you know. I think because I'd seen the violent swings of AIM before, I was quite prepared to see a, you know, greater than 50% loss. And but I must admit, when it did drop sort of below 0.5, I did start to get a bit peed off with it then. And that fundraising that happened recently was really, you know, I guess it had to be done, but it wasn't nice. But it, you know, it does look like it's certainly done well. I mean, it's practically doubled since that placing, hasn't it? And it hopefully it sort of, you know, there's a lot of news from now and it starts to build. What do you think?
Yeah, well, there's certainly some green shoots with regards to Thor Mining. Obviously, as you say, you've been there since the 4P days. I think the market cap then must have been close to 20 million. I think.
Yeah.
I mean, it's sitting about sort of 4 million just now. As you say, it's doubled probably in the last 3 or 4 weeks. It's interesting. Obviously, there's a sort of legacy assets. They've got the Molly Hill, the Tungsten, and everybody's waiting in the finance getting done. But at the moment, the market's just written that off.
Well, it's not. Yeah, it's a shame, isn't it, though? Because, I mean, obviously, the CEO was talking as if we were almost getting a deal done. And that's significant. And, you know, I've always thought with CEOs, you've got to be so careful with like expectation management. You know, as soon as you put a time frame on something or suggest something, investors start to expect it. It's a very risky thing to do, I think, you know, unless, even if you're uber confident. I think if I was in that position, I would probably play it down just, you know, because it's too much of a risk.
Yeah, I think you'll wake up one morning and there'll be an announcement for Molly Hill. I don't think there's going to be any, you know, we're not going to, you know, get wind of it. I think it's just, if it's going to happen, it'll just happen. We won't.
You reckon it'll just surprise us?
It'll just surprise us. So, I mean, that's in the back burner just now. And obviously, they've got the Bonya drilling results coming up as well. So, again, that's kind of associated with Molly Hill, because obviously that's going to be, if it does go into production, Bonya's going to be the sort of feedstock to increase the mine life by many years. So
yeah,
but they seem to have switched focus recently.
Yeah,
and it's copper and gold, so to speak. And there's a big push in Kapunda at the moment. Obviously the. It's not groundbreaking. It's been around a long time, this in situ recovery, but it's still sort of an unproven technology. But Kapunda, I'd done quite a lot of research on Kapunda, and obviously the company has brought it up a few months ago as well about the historical gold intersections that they'd found in a couple of holes. I mean, some of it's astonishing. It's like 90 metres from surface at 3 grams per tonne.
So this is what, information you've pulled from, what, a while ago?
Well, the company actually flagged this up probably in, I think it was it April 19? They had referred to a historical report and they had put some intersections in, and nobody really picked up on it. I didn't pick up on it, and it was just talking to somebody recently that happened to mention it, and I started digging into it and going through some historical reports. And I mean, there is, it's on Twitter because I've posted it on Twitter under my Stalling Bridge resources account. There was a postulated estimate that there could be 1.3 million ounces of gold in Kapunda, which is quite astonishing when you think that nobody's even mentioned it. So, but the problem with Kapunda is it's in the middle of a town.
Right.
So there's environmental issues. They can't just do open pit. So this is why they're doing this in situ recovery.
And would that work for gold as well then?
Well, that's part of the technology. They're still trying to prove it at the moment. They've had initial success. Recently they've drilled another three holes. So I'd imagine once they get the results back from the lab, I think they'll do some more work in the ISR for gold recovery. But the signs are good. But the way I'm going to look at that is it's a copper project with a gold byproduct. You know, it doesn't matter how minute, you know, if it's only 0.3 of a gram of gold, if you're getting that as a free credit, it's a bumper win.
Of course.
Kapunda looks really interesting.
And Kapunda, just on Kapunda, because that's an old mine, isn't it? It's an old copper mine.
Yeah, I think it's one of the first copper mines in Australia. In fact, if you look right back in the 1800s, they were actually shipping the ore to the United Kingdom.
Oh, right.
For processing and treating.
What? And then why did it stop producing then? Just market conditions or...?
Well, Mark, they just really went for the low-hanging fruit in the 1800s. Oh, okay. And they just took the high-grade copper from various shafts, and then it's just really sat there. Bit of historical drilling in the 60s and 70s, and they've never really progressed it since. So
this in-situ recovery that Thor are trialling now with the help of the Australian government grant, actually, which I think is quite significant. Is that the first time that ISR has been used on Kapunda?
To my knowledge, yes.
Well, like this, that is exciting, isn't it? To see how those results come through. Do we know when we're expecting them?
Well, they're pending. I think the 27th of November they put out an announcement, and they could obviously use XRF, which is like your portable analysis for the copper. And they got some really high grade copper intersections, but XRF is not very reliable for gold, so they've put it into. Okay. The lab for gold assays. So if that comes back with anything like the historical results, then it could certainly be very interesting. And what I've noticed as well is that there is a boundary around about Kapunda, which is part of the area that you can't obviously open pit. But these three drill holes actually look as if they're out with this boundary. So whether the same regulations that apply to this area, I don't know. It's a question you probably need to ask Thor. But
the same regulations, what in terms of what? Sorry.
Yeah. So there's like a kind of there's a boundary around about Kapunda, and within that boundary, the only way you can extract the copper is ISR, and out with this boundary, I am assuming I don't know that it's just game on, normal mining.
Techniques
apply. I think that would be my take on it. Don't quote me, but I think that's why they drilled these three holes out with the area, so they could, if they did hit some decent gold intersections, then it's a different prospect altogether.
So at the moment, what's going on? That it's drill holes and then assaying them.
So they drilled three holes. It was the actual holes. I think their primary function was for this sort of. Testing of the ISR, sort of hydro.
Oh, okay. So they are actually running an ISR test.
Yeah. So
now
they're doing that with these three holes, and obviously,
right. Okay.
They've sent the stuff to the lab, so we should know. I would imagine maybe next week. I don't know. I'm just guessing.
We don't know, do we?
I don't know, but I mean, it said they were pending on the 27th of November. So you think there's a month?
Okay.
I know it's over Christmas, the lab's shut down, but...
Yeah, yeah.
But hopefully in the next couple of weeks.
Yeah, it'll be very interesting as well to see how it comes back. And as you say, if they get gold recovery in there as well, then it's a bonus, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely. Definitely.
Okay.
And they're also, just while we're on Kapunda, because it's the same same technique, Moonta, which is also in South Australia, it's also an ISR target, but it's a much larger target than Kapunda. I think Kapunda is about 119,000 tons resource at the moment, but I think they're targeting somewhere like maybe about 800,000 tons of copper. Moonta.
Oh, okay.
And I believe that the geology is better for ISR, so they could go down a lot deeper than 100 metres. And again, at Moonta, and I've looked at all the historical reports, again, there's a lot of gold intersections there as well, some really pretty hefty ones. So there is a lot of gold in Thor. It just seems to be... not their priority, but slowly they seem to be turning to it. No, it's interesting. And there's other, obviously there's Pilbara as well. Two exploration licenses at Pilbara. And the interesting things about these licenses is that they are about 5 kilometres from Greatland Gold's Panorama project. Greatland have done some initial exploration there, and they've actually recovered quite a lot of nuggets. So it'll be interesting to see what happens at these two licenses that Thor have. It looks the same geology, and the initial sort of stream sediment sampling program they've done, they had visible gold when they were panning. So I think it's watch this space in Pilbara as well, because that could be interesting.
So what have we got? We've got Pilbara, which is gold. We've got Moonta, which is gold as well.
Moonta is copper.
Copper, right, okay.
So Kapunda's copper gold.
Copper gold, yep. And then we've got Molly Hill, which is tungsten, but that's kind of just it'll surprise us when it comes in. And then finally we've got, it's just Pilot Mountain, is that right, that's left?
Pilot Mountain, which is tungsten as well. But there's also one, funnily enough, I was looking at it earlier on, there's quite a substantial vanadium project called Gervois. I think that's how they pronounce it. Thor are a 40% hold on this project, and there's a load of historical data available, and some of the drilling, there's some really tasty intersections of vanadium. And in fact, I think the exploration target for Gervois is about 110 million tons at 0.3 to 0.8%, which when you actually do the maths, it's over £1 billion of vanadium. So it's quite a tasty project. And
yeah, that is.
I mean, vanadium, people say, what's vanadium? What's it used for? Well, mainly it's a sort of high strength steel and sort of alloys. But obviously with this EV revolution underway, it's also got a future use in the energy storage market. So there's quite a lot of these sort of redox sort of flow battery farms springing up all over the place as energy solutions for sort of remote towns and the outback and places like that. So there's going to be quite a demand in vanadium going forward as well. So like I say, nobody's talking about it. The company's not even talking about it, but it's there.
Is there work going on, do you know?
They did have a... They put out an RNS, I'm trying to think when it was, give me 2 seconds. July 19, they pushed out a development plan, and they were talking what they were going to do. But obviously a lot's happened since July 19, the Thor share price, so I'd imagine it's right at the bottom of the to-do list. But like I say, the project's there, the vanadium's there, you never know, it could... come back to life if the Thor share price gets back up to where it should be.
Yeah, where it should be. I mean, so there's a lot, isn't there? Actually, you know, you forget, and I'm an investor, and I had forgotten about that one. But actually, we're just having a chat now. They've got quite a few projects, haven't they, really, which are looking quite tasty.
Yeah, no, there's definitely a lot going on. Obviously, everybody had pinned their hopes on the financing coming off from Molly Hill, and as soon as that didn't happen, it's just been one of these vicious circles. And
I think that was the problem, wasn't it? That was the focus. I think that was the focus of the company, and it was what investors were holding out for. And I think that was, obviously that was a mistake, and that's why we ended up where we were. But with the refocus on these different projects, I mean, we're really just waiting on results, aren't we, now? It's back to good old exploration, and those RNS results when they come in, which, well, should be fairly soon, I'd have thought.
Yeah, well, you've got Kapunda, the Pilbara stuff, and there's also, there was drilling done in Bonya as well.
Yeah, okay. That's
coming soon as well. So hopefully early January 2020, we should be a bit of news flow, and if there's, if there's some nice gold assays in there, then hopefully game on.
So what do you reckon then? Can we put a market cap on a price estimate, or would you rather wait and see what these RNSs say and then do some maths?
I think I'll go back to that. I wouldn't be talking to you on a Saturday afternoon if I had the answer. But you know, if there's some good intersections of gold in there and it's economic, etc., then you know, one and a half pence quite easily. I mean, that only puts it. I'm trying to think, market cap.
What that make it? Yeah,
four million. You know, that'd be a bit. 10 million market cap.
Yeah, which is modest, isn't it?
Yeah.
For what they've got. Considering it was at, 20 million?
A couple of years ago, yeah.
Yeah, a couple of years ago, something like that.
You've got to remember as well, I mean, they've had a few changes in the board. So there's a couple of guys gone.
Yeah.
One of the Metal Tiger guys has stepped in. So, I mean, Metal Tiger have got quite a large holding in Thor. So I imagine they'll be... not pulling a few strings, but they'll certainly have a say in in certain things. So hence why the guy is on the board. I can't remember his name, it escapes me.
Mark Potter, I think.
Mark Potter. Yeah. So yeah, I think it's just, I watch this space with Thor, and I mean, it's got a good following, obviously, in Twitter. It's been around for a while, so
yeah,
I think there'd be a lot of people would be ready to jump back in if we get some decent assays and we can get the projects moving again.
Yeah, exactly. Well, let's see. Oh, well, I think that's a good little 40 minutes there of talking there, Kenny. So probably it's best to sort of end it now. Hopefully, we can do these on a regular basis, and we'll just talk about, you know, really different stocks, I guess, and what's going on, and see what comes up, really.
Yeah, but yeah, we'll do it again, no problem. It's almost beer o'clock here in Scotland, so I think I'll need to go and have a can of beer, because my throat's certainly dry, so it is, so yeah.
Yeah, okay, well, you go and enjoy that. Thanks for your time, Kenny.